Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Nearly a dozen big banks are now putting together a $30 billion bailout package for First Republic Bank to keep it from tanking. CBS's Steve Futterman has details.
11 financial institutions are taking part, including such big names as J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America. Each of them will add $5 billion in uninsured deposits. Banking consultant Bert Ely.
I think to some extent it's psychological in the sense of saying, you know, here's the banking industry. They're under stress and they're sticking together and helping each other out.
Among those helping to put together the rescue package, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
The family of a black man who died at a mental hospital in Virginia last week says video shows seven sheriff's deputies using absolute brutality while he was handcuffed and shackled. Irvo Otierno's mother, Caroline.
It was disturbing. It was traumatic. My son was tortured.
The deputies and three hospital employees now face second-degree murder charges. They claim they felt threatened, but it's unclear how. It is hailing in Fort Worth, Texas, as severe thunderstorms move through North Texas and parts of Oklahoma tonight. A tornado watch is also in place for some parts of Central Texas. So far, there are no reports of any damage or injuries. The UK is following the U.S.'s lead in banning TikTok from its government phones. The move comes as the Biden administration urges the app's Chinese parent company to divest itself. CBS's Scott McFarlane is on Capitol Hill.
They've already moved pretty nimbly in Congress to prohibit the use of TikTok on federal government phones. So there's actually signs of life on this issue. There's clearly transcendent concern about what impact the Chinese government can have on American users, American kids.
TikTok CEO is set to testify before Congress next week. The CDC says the maternal death rate is now at its highest level since 1964. Dr. Veronica Gillespie Bell says it's especially hard for black women.
There are things that have happened historically that make us believe black individuals don't feel pain in the same way. And as healthcare providers, we then do not prescribe pain medicine appropriately for black and brown patients.
She says public awareness and improved public policy can help. Well, it's not a brick house, but a big rock the size of a house is set to whiz past Earth tomorrow. The asteroid's about 54 feet. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's GOP-led assembly passed a measure this week allowing the discredited practice of conversion therapy, which tries to change a person's sexual orientation, to continue in the state. Instead of putting the measure to a vote over concerns Governor Evers would veto it, the bill was placed in committee. That ensures conversion therapy will stand until the current legislative session ends in 2024. LGBTQ rights activists say conversion therapy can increase the risk of suicide and depression. A Wisconsin prison located in Oregon has opened a $7 million assisted living facility for incarcerated people with advanced medical needs. The unit at the minimum security Oak Hill Correctional Institution opened last month with a 65-bed capacity. I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing, advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I'm waiting for more information. As our friend Doug Jones said yesterday, maybe take a breath, let the investigations work their way out, find out what caused this. I still keep going. I think Peter Thiel pulling his money. I think there's something there. We need to investigate that. I think deregulation had a huge amount to do with this. There's a lot here to investigate and to be angry about. And look. I'm not buying that taxpayers aren't going to be on the hook for it, but we will see. But I do find it interesting that how quickly our government can move to make sure banks don't go under, and yet student loan debt, making sure people stay in their homes, not so much. But here to share some thoughts and maybe give a different perspective to this situation, I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come share some thoughts. He's the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. PatrioticMillionaires.org is their website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to see you, Rick. Thank you.
So let's get with the banks here. You've got this Silicon Valley Bank. You've got the Signature Bank. You've got a couple other ones that have gone down. Gut reaction as somebody who's played in these worlds?
Gut reaction, this Silicon Valley Bank is the same kind of thing that happened in the 70s and the 80s. Bankers taking in deposits, seeing how much money they could make issuing mortgages for 30 years, doing 30-year mortgages. Guys go withdraw their deposits one day. They look to sell the mortgages to make up the money to pay off the depositors. Rates are up. People stopped prepaying their mortgages. Last year, Rick, 30% of everyone paid off their mortgage early in 2021, the year before last. 30%. That means you could consider a mortgage like a 2 or 3 year kind of note. This past year, now it's down to 4% of people paying off their mortgages early. People are not refinancing anymore, and of course they're not because interest rates are higher.
Right.
So those mortgages that people thought were, 2, 3 years, are now 20 years. Rates that were at like 2% are now at 5.5%. And they lost billions and billions of dollars and realized they could not sell even all the mortgages for enough money to pay off the depositors. And they had to close the bank. They were insolvent.
So you're going to say you're going to put the blame of this on the Fed for raising the interest rates, which there's a lot of blame that belongs there.
Well, that was the proximate cause, but the bank management should have not been in that situation. They should have, their job is to think about what might happen if rates go down, what might happen if rates go up, what might happen if more people prepay their mortgages, what might happen if there's a snowstorm and we can't open the bank tomorrow. They're supposed to think of every possibility and have a plan for it. And these guys, either deliberately or because they're incompetent, did not do that. And I think it's good that they're all unemployed now, personally. It was just I mean, that's not what bankers are supposed to do.
Right.
But I think that the government did the right thing. We don't want to have is everybody saying, oh, my God, the banks might fail, and taking their money out of every one of them except for the big four. Because we now have, like, community banks all over the country. There's thousands of them. I don't want to have just four banks that run the entire country. So I want the government to tell people it's okay to have a checking account in whatever bank you want. And you're going to be okay, and your paychecks are going to clear, and you don't have to worry about what bank they're using for your direct deposit. That's not your job. The same way you can't investigate whether, you know, the ice cream was made properly in your grocery store. You depend on the government for that. You also can't investigate your bank and decide if they're operating safely or not. That's also the government's job.
Yeah, but you know, all of us, you know, we have this assurance that those of us who aren't wealthy, all those of us who don't have more than $250,000 to lay around in a bank account, we know that our deposits are going to be insured because the FDIC insurance says that. This is those folks who have, you know, accounts well over that. You know, and this is where I think a lot of the confusion came, because you're right. A lot of people thought, oh, I might not get my money out of the bank. Without explaining exactly who we're talking about.
Not really. The people who were worried were guys making payrolls yesterday morning. On Sunday night, there are people saying, we have 1,000 nurses in a hospital. We have a payroll Wednesday morning. If I employ them on Monday and Tuesday, knowing I don't have money, I could be personally liable. This was the chairman of the board of the directors of the hospital. So there was thousands of people, 1,000 people that each had a couple $1,000s, but it was one account as far as the FDIC is concerned that was doing their direct deposits. And that's what people were worried about Sunday night, the meetings, was thousands of people getting laid off on Monday and Tuesday because there wasn't money in their payroll accounts to pay them. And that's the, I mean, that's not the same thing you're supposed to worry about.
Yeah.
A truck driver knowing what bank the direct deposits are coming from, and the fact that, you know, the trucking company has 1,000 drivers, and that adds up to a lot more than $250,000 when they have to pay all of them their monthly income. So that's, I mean, I feel...
No, that's an important point to make, and it's something that people need to understand, because I had a bunch of people very angry at Biden and the administration for doing anything, because there's a sentiment out there, especially among working people who have been taking it on the chin for so long, that these banks do these things, put themselves into these positions, and the government comes in and makes sure that they're backstopped. And yet families, you know, when they get into trouble, they lose their homes. People lose their jobs. We can't get debt relief for students. We can't seem to help, you know, the folks who are the ham and eggers who are showing up every day to those jobs. But people who make these big mistakes, you know, we help. So it's important to explain it, I think, just the way you did.
I thank you. And Biden is, of course, trying to help the student loan people. And he's getting lawsuits from bill collectors saying they're going to lose their jobs collecting bills if he gives student loan debt relief. And yes, that's probably true. But I don't really have much sympathy for bill collectors harassing student loan people.
No.
But I also think that they felt they had to do this because they wanted to protect people's paychecks this week. So, and they're not using any government money at all, too. They have money in the FDIC funds that probably will cover all this. And if not, they're going to be assessing the big banks higher FDIC fees to pay for this. You heard the president. He said, no, they're not bailing out the bank. They're not bailing out the executives. They're not bailing out the shareholders. They're not bailing out the investors. Only the people with checking accounts and only with private money, not with one single penny of taxpayers' money.
I hope that is accurate, because I don't think we know how deep this goes, do we? I mean, do we have a sense of how deep this problem is? Because, you know, I seem to remember the last time, you know, there was one, then there was another, then boom, there was a bunch.
Well, I mean, I hope there's not a bunch. And that's the idea, is telling people that your checking accounts are protected and you don't have to take your money out of your account. And hopefully people will listen.
Yeah.
Very few banks were taking this kind of interest rate risk that this bank was by investing billions and billions of dollars in 30-year mortgages. In fact, I'm quite sure there aren't any others, actually. Most banks make business loans that renew every 6 months or every year. And so they go up in interest rates as time goes on when rates go up.
I've been told this bank, this Silicon Valley Bank, was heavily leveraged into startups. In fact, you've got people saying it's the woke culture who's, you know, all invested in this ESG, the environment, social, and good corporate governance. It's all the green energy. That's what brought these down. It wasn't mortgages or anything else. So they
weren't lending money to the startups. They were getting deposits from the startups. Their loans are money good. Their problem was they were giving people 30-year fixed rate mortgages. That was their problem. And they were investing in some government bonds that were 10, 20, 30 years also. But their basic problem was 30-year mortgages. Their problem was not people failing to pay their loans. They hardly loaned any money to these startups because the startups were getting their money from venture capitalists. They were taking money in deposits when the startups got their money. So then they were going to, you know, use them for payroll month after month after month. And then they were taking all that money and trying to earn a spread by investing in 30-year mortgages. That's what they were doing. And, I mean, frankly, they weren't woke at all. I think they were asleep at the switch in doing this.
There's a good line there. That's actually a pretty good line there. But let me ask you this, because, you know, Peter Thiel's been, his name has been thrown around a lot. Does he have any responsibility in this, or was he just being a good vulture capitalist and taking his money where he saw the opportunity?
I mean, I think a lot of people should have known a while ago that this was happening. It was pretty obvious in their end of year financial statements they filed months ago, weeks ago. And I would note that the president of the bank sold stock. It was according to a 10b5 plan, but he only created the 10b5 plan 3 weeks ago. So one might argue that he had inside information then, seeing as the bank was clearly borderline insolvent in November and December last year, that, you know, making a plan to sell stock in February probably did involve some inside information, maybe.
Yeah, so maybe some jail time there, because we never seem to lock these people up because they took bonuses hours before. And I know Senator John Tester is saying we should claw those back, but I'm saying it should be a little bit more than just clawing back the bonuses.
I mean, there should be laws against, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what is and isn't illegal, but this should be illegal. If I was in charge, I would write some laws that bankers who are running an FDIC-insured institution are not allowed to do this.
Yeah, and how much of this also has to do with the fact that that during the Trump years they deregulated? I mean, we've been talking about this the last couple of days. I have problems with the deregulation culture. How much of this played into this? I know there was a big push to, you know, we need to help these regional banks because, you know, the big boys have all this power. How much of that plays into this?
Well, yeah, they did help the regional banks. This bank probably, if they left the laws the way it were and banks got scrutiny at above $50 billion, which the bank was way above 50, it was like at around $200 billion, instead of making the limit $250 billion, the regulators probably would have noticed maybe a year ago this bank was getting into trouble and not, I mean, what they did, they would have failed asset liability management 101 if they had taken the class, given what they're doing. So
I understand, they didn't have a risk assessment manager for, I guess, 9 months last year. Is that accurate?
Would be part of the problem. Yes, that position was vacant from like April through November, December, I think. Yeah. It's like a comedy of errors. These guys running this bank were just incompetent, or they just decided they'll put it all on the line because maybe they'll win and they'll make a huge amount of profit and get big bonuses. And if they lose, well, they'll be fired, but the FDIC will sort it out.
And that's where I go. And this is where my anger is, Morris, that we've created an environment. We hear a lot about moral hazard. We've created an environment where nobody fails in this world. On that front, but at the end of it, the guy at the bottom, the guy loses his home, loses his job, families are out in the street. I look at 2009, 8, 9, and 10. We saw a bunch of that. That's where my struggle with this is.
I think in this case, I mean, I'm on the other side of this one.
Okay.
Because in this case, it's the bank executives who are unemployed, and the guy's paychecks did clear yesterday.
Okay, good.
So I think the FDIC and the regulators did act to save the little guys who had these $3,000 and $5,000 payroll checks, and did fire the bank executives, and did, they're not paying the shareholders anything.
Good.
So people lost. I mean, the shareholders lost billions of dollars on this collectively. And the little guys seem to be coming out okay.
That's what I want to hear. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on the crypto markets. I don't know. Do you do anything with the crypto markets? I don't know anything about it. But evidently, the reports that I've been reading is now big trouble because of this. Because I guess Signature Bank was big into this. Any thoughts on crypto and how this plays? Or do we not care about crypto?
Yeah, I recommend ignoring crypto. I really do.
Okay.
It's like if you issued like Rick Smith dollars to people. I mean, maybe some people would take them, but I don't know why.
I don't either. So last question I got. Where do you see this going in the coming days? You're a guy who watches this stuff. Do you fear it gets worse? Do you think things are going to be okay? Because I got to tell you, over the weekend, I had people, the sky's falling. It's the end of the world. I had friends calling, am I going to lose everything? Where do you see things going? I know predictions are tough, but any thoughts?
I mean, I think the Treasury Secretary and Grunberg from the FDIC and the Fed are holding up the sky, and they're not going to let it fall.
All right.
And I think that we in America... The Biden understands people in Pennsylvania and other places who need their paychecks every single week and can't go without them. And I think they're going to protect those people, even at the expense of the investors and executives.
That is exactly what I wanted to hear. Morris, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah. See you next week, Rick.
Good stuff. Thank you. Our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, in listening to Morris talk, I'm glad he framed it the way he did, because it was much more clear and concise than I've heard it put before. The executives got fired, and they did. Still not clawing back the bonuses yet. That hopefully will happen, may happen, hopefully it will. And the shareholders got the stiff. That doesn't happen often. I got an angry email yesterday. In fact, I think I read part of it on the air yesterday on the show, where someone was talking about Obama bailing out the auto industry. And I said, the weird thing about that was it wasn't really so much as a bailout as it was a controlled bankruptcy. And in that controlled bankruptcy that we gave, a bunch of loans to the auto companies that they paid back. It was the first time in one of these bankruptcies that the workers didn't take it on the chin, that they got to keep their pensions. And it's this kind of stuff that I think is important to point out. When these crises happen, when these rich people, they because they know they're going to get bailed out. But when it happens, you know, do they take it on the chin too? And I'm glad Morris pointed that out, because I think it's really important for us to understand. I see this differently, going very differently with a Trump administration, with a what was his name? What was the Treasury Secretary from the Trump era? I see it very differently going under his rule. And it's just one of those things where I'm feeling a lot better with Biden in the White House. And because the policies and the direction that they would take, Mnuchin was his name, Steve Mnuchin. I feel much better, you know, having, you know, Janet Yellen than Mnuchin, because, you know, the shareholders didn't get made whole, and that the workers did. I mean, this is why I voted for Joe Biden. And as I've said 1,000 times, he wasn't my first choice. Wasn't even my third choice. But I'm happy with the way he's responded to crisis after crisis, and done it in a way without hyperbole, done it in a way with fighting the other side. Just that kind of get the job done. In fact, I had a conversation with a guy today, you know, who said that, you know, one of the things that he likes about him is it's like our parents and our grandparents. You know, it was just, you just do the job. You know, it's, you're not looking for, you know, congratulations. You just show up, you do your job. And this is what I like about it. We are reshoring manufacturing because there's a reason. The rest of the globe's in turmoil. We are not, and all of the military people will tell you, we are not prepared for major conflict around the world. We are not prepared to produce the things that we need. And the pandemic pointed that out. The pandemic was I think the alarm that we as a country needed. While I was screaming about this for years before the pandemic, maybe this was that wake-up call that the rest of us needed. To say, look, if you're going to have a war machine, you got to be able to build it. If you're going to be a first world country, you got to be able to produce what you need. And you've got to be able to do it in a way that's going to create jobs, that's going to create employment, going to be able to create a standard of living. And I think Biden understands this, which is why I see us moving away from some of the neoliberal tendencies while he was in the Senate. And I hear people all the time, well, you know, he did this back. I know. And I didn't like it. And was arguing against it back then. Was not a DLC Democrat. Was not a big Clinton supporter. Was not a neoliberal. People evolve. And he's evolved on a lot of these issues. Also, I like the fact that, you know, he's not going to cave on Social Security. It's one of the again, you want something, you want to hear me bash Obama? That's something to bash him on. That Simpson-Bowles Commission was BS. But here's the thing. We didn't react strong enough. We as a working class are too divided. And they know, both sides know this. Both sides don't fear the working people of this country. Both sides don't, because they know, they've segmented us off. They've divvied people up. I look at France. They in France were talking about raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. And you had people shutting things down. Trucks turned sideways on the streets, mass protests. And you're seeing it right now. In fact, Macron, the president of France, has decided, you know what, screw Parliament. I'm going to unilaterally raise the retirement age. It is going to be interesting to see what happens over the next several days in France. Now, understand, he's talking about raising it from 62 to 64. The retirement age for me in this moment is 67. They're talking about raising it to 70 and beyond. because as the one senator said, well, people want to work into their 70s. I don't know anybody who wants to retire. Question is, do you? And when do we become that country that goes, no, as a working class?
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Democrats are blaming former President Trump and Republicans for the latest banking crisis. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown says lobbyists in Washington have too much influence.
Bank lobbyists have too much power in this town. Bank lobbyists get Congress to change the laws, get administrations 4 years ago to roll back rules.
Seven sheriff's deputies now face murder charges for the death of a black man who died while restrained at a mental hospital last week in Virginia. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump.
When you look at these pictures taken at the autopsy, it tells you that there is nothing natural about this. It screams out for justice.
In Texas, tornado sirens and hail as severe thunderstorms blow through Fort Worth. That severe weather is expected to hit North Texas and Oklahoma tonight, but it's still too early to tell whether there's any damage there. CBS News Brief, I'm Monica Ricks.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Republicans have a plan to update the state's abortion ban. It would create exceptions for rape and incest. Democrats oppose the bill. They say it doesn't go far enough to restore abortion rights. Even Republicans don't see a future for the bill. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux says it's pointless since Governor Evers would veto it anyway. Aaron Rodgers, sounding like his days as a star quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, are over.
At this point, as I sit here, you know, I think since Friday, I made it clear that my intention was to play, and my intention was to play for the New York Jets.
Rodgers on the Pat McAfee podcast yesterday. Rodgers won four MVP awards and a Super Bowl in 18 seasons in Green Bay. Also in sports, the Bucks host Indiana tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
The issue with Milwaukee schools, just not enough high-quality schools.
Weekdays 11 to 2.
You can talk about everything else. You can talk about the funding. You can talk about school choice and for it or against it. But there's not enough Hope Christian schools. There's not enough St. Marcus schools. There's not enough Kings. There's not enough Reagans.
And until we fix that,
Milwaukee public schools really isn't going to change.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've been waiting all day for this moment. I've been waiting all day to talk to my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to get his thoughts on the fact that the Senate today voted to advance a repeal of the 1991 and 2002 authorizations for the use of military force. And again, this is another one of those moments where you go, there's so much around that era, that 91 era. There's so much around, you know, the 2002 era of, you know, sending people into Iraq that I think we should revisit. You know, like that whole they had weapons of mass destruction thing. We should be opening this up and holding people accountable. But here to share some thoughts on this and, well, all of the other news we can get to, our good friend Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of this? Is this a good thing? Is this going to be helpful? Does this matter in this moment?
Well, it's good. Look, it's been 20 years to the day when we began our, you know, shock and awe campaign. And as you and I have discussed on your show over the years, when I've been asked what was the worst thing that happened to you, I don't answer Jack Abramoff and the scandal. I answer that vote to allow full force. And the reason I voted that way, as many members did, was because I was shown information which, again, to this day, is kept secret, which is ridiculous, Rick. It should be revealed what we saw.
Yeah.
And then we need to ask the question, why did you show this? Who were you standing down there in the well of the house? Why did you lie? So we voted based on the, you know, quote, information we saw. There were no weapons of mass destruction. What's amazing, though, is that the full force and ability stayed intact all these years. That's what's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing that we haven't undone this. But and how many times have we used this as justification to go into other places, though?
What's that?
How many times have we used this as justification to use force in other places? I mean, you know, what were the consequences?
And that's what's interesting. This, you know, 19 Saudis flew on planes going into our buildings, and we used full force and power against Saddam Hussein, and then it was kept there, just in case somebody else wanted to go somewhere else. Like we used to say, you know, Dick Cheney turned to Bush and said, I said Iran, not Iraq. I mean, this whole thing was long overdue. I'm glad the Senate did it, because if something happens again like that, it should be evaluated, number one. Rick, members that were there when I was there should speak up and say, wait a minute, fooled me once. You know the old shame on me. And this should have been, again, you know, just removed a long time ago.
No, this again, when these things come up, it's then, you know, brings up all of it. To where, you know, we should be getting to the bottom of all of it so that it never happens again, because thousands of lives were lost, you know, trillions of dollars of treasury, just thrown away, and you know, just the chaos that, and you know, the mass refugee problems and all of it.
Right. You know, the other thing about this too, after it was found no weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, and that we were either lied to or somebody was pretty stupid that took this information together, although we know Ahmed Chalabi, who's now dead, who wanted to be president of Iraq, was behind this misinformation campaign. In my book, in fact, I wrote that I was in London when somebody pointed out there and said, do you know who that man is? I said, no. They said, that's Ahmed Chalabi. He will take your country into war, which he did within 6 months, you know, with the information. What amazes me, though, is when, and I was asked this question many times, you know, what about your vote? And when members actually answered, Rick, well, Saddam was a bad guy. Well, you know what? I think that the premier of China is a bad guy. Maybe we should have invaded Beijing. It actually would have maybe got some jobs back. So you don't invade based on a bad guy. Otherwise, you know, there's plenty of them around the planet.
Yeah, but the other part of that is he was our bad guy. I mean, that's...
Well, it was who we designate. And as I told Karl Rove one time to his face, I said, when you have these discussions, at the White House, you don't have a face in the room that is from there. You know, the Iraqis, the Arabs, you know, you don't have them. And then I also told him, when this began, you may get the democracy you don't want. And then we took the bold step, not only with this misinformation campaign that was fed, and of course, mainstream corporate media bought into it and fed it, but on top of it, we appoint an American governor of Iraq. I mean, just look at the, and all of that, the president was able to do it because we gave him full ability.
Yeah. Whatever happened to L. Paul Bremer?
Yeah, I don't know. He lost, how many billions did he lose over there on pallets?
Yeah. I think it was like $8 billion within a couple of.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, you know, give or take $6 to $8 billion. I don't know what happened to him.
No, and it's not just the 2002 authorization. I go back to 91. You know, I still remember the candy striper, and this is going way back. You know, the you know, pulling babies out of incubators. That was all fabricated.
I'm not familiar with that.
No, this the candy striper, a Kuwaiti, you know, a diplomat's daughter or niece or something, who claimed she was a candy striper at a hospital in Kuwait, and the Iraqi soldiers came in and pulled babies out of incubators and bayoneted them on the floor. And it was part of the outrage campaign that got us as a country moving in that direction. It was on 60 Minutes. It was a big deal.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And she was never in the country. She was not in the country when she claimed that was happening. It was all made up.
And then the royal family fled to London. We went in, took care of everything, and then I think they gave, after a while, gave most of the contracts to other countries to rebuild.
Yep. Yeah. Again, this is a good start. We got a lot more to get to. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're with former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney. Bob, I want to get your thoughts on this story out of, I guess Wisconsin. Or I guess this is actually Michigan that's happened. Wisconsin guy, this Brian Higgins, he's pled guilty, I guess a reduced charge in his role to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer. This, I guess, another big victory for the prosecutors there. And kind of going against the whole, it was all made up, there was nothing going on there, another conviction.
Right. The Wisconsin man pled guilty for the his part in the plot. His name is Brian Higgins, and he was trying to provide, basically, he was charged with trying to provide material support for terrorism. Now, that carries a maximum prison term of 5 years, which, you know, it kind of amazes me. The maximum prison term is 5 years for providing material support for terrorism, be it domestic or international, I guess. But he drove past her second home, and then the friends of his waited across the lake for a signal from him with this, like, laser-style device. And he was, I think they were scheduled, he and four others were scheduled to face a trial basically later this year. They were going to go on trial.
Yeah, I'm of the mindset, lock them up. Are you surprised at the complaining and the whining from like the Marjorie Three names and the Louis Gohmerts of the world about how bad the D.C. jails are, and you know, how bad the criminal jail, and trying to make the people that have been arrested some kind of martyrs, when the reality is, yeah, our jails are bad. Maybe you should fix them, but you can't claim it's that they're doing something special to these people. They're criminals.
When I was down there, nobody came to see if I was okay. You know, I missed that one.
Yeah.
It amazes me. Marjorie Three Names, nothing amazes me, I guess, about her. But a few of the members that went down to see how the insurrectionists were taken care of in the jail, they probably don't even look at their own local jails to see how their people were housed in their state, you know, but they went down there to make sure that, you know, the people that were sightseers in the Capitol are taken care of in the D.C. jail system.
Yeah. Now here's for me, this is one of those moments, because I like to try and find some common ground with people I disagree with. There is common ground to be had here. Our jails are not the Club Med that I'm sure a lot of these people who are now locked up for their crimes probably believe them to be, you know, because they're swimming pools and watch cable TV and lift weights all the time. It's not the Club Med they thought. It's actually pretty bad. So there's some common ground here that maybe we could fix our judicial system, that you can get speedy trials like we're supposed to have, and that the prisons and the holding cells aren't as horrible as they as I've heard they are. Unfortunately, I've only heard how bad they are.
Well, I mean, if, like I said, if they went in their own states or federal prisons in their nearby states, it'd be one thing. I just don't like the idea of why they went down there, you know, to coddle, quote, the sightseers. But look, I was in, and if I had a dollar for everybody to say, oh, you were in Club Fed because Barbara Walters, you know, had done a story years before, and one of them was Morgantown Federal Correction, which is not a camp; it's a minimum. But I assure you, of the 1,300 people that were in there, I used to call it, you know, the warehouse, and there were a lot of people, obviously addicts, people with different forms of mental illness. People were in there that weren't the Medellin drug cartel, but they were charged like they were. They were drug addicts, and they were charged and given 10 years, 9 years, 8 years. And I've often said, and I've told this privately to several members over the years, haven't done it recently, Rick, but I've told them privately, tell the Bureau of Prisons, and I said, I'll sit down with you. I'll give you all the information you need. Tell the Bureau of Prisons you want to go into the prison, and don't let them tell you that, you know, you're not going to be safe. You want to go into the prison, and I said, I'll give you a list of things. And when they try to take you on the, quote, tour, here's the questions that you ask them, and you tell them, here's what I want to see. You know, because I was in there. It's just ludicrous. And it's not just the food. I can tell you examples of people that were supposed to, you know how you hear, you get your education, people say, well, those prisoners get school paid for. Try to get your tests proctored so you can actually, you know, get your grades. Good luck in a lot of cases. It's actually just pathetic. So yeah, I wish they would get common ground. We have more people incarcerated than anywhere else, not per capita, but actual numbers of anywhere else on earth.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. And look, I hear it even to this day that, you know, people think, oh, it's this wonderful Club Med. I'm going, no, that's not what I hear. And it's interesting to hear the whining coming out of these folks from January 6th, which I understand, according to the U.S. attorney, there's going to be another 1,000 people that evidently they're about to pick up. Are you hearing this?
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, evidently there's supposed to be another 1,000 that they're, I guess, lower-level offenders, but evidently there's more, and good. I guess we need that.
Well, I was thinking some tough plea deals here and there. If they, the government had gotten a little bit tougher, might have also made a few more people do a plea deal, which if they weren't doing major damage, they could do community service, you know, do a certain amount of ankle bracelet, amount of volunteer work. I mean, there's a lot of different ways the system could, you know, could take care of that.
Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, your former party, the Republican Party, seems to have a lot of characters, very interesting ones. I mean, you got George Santos, who is, he's filed a letter of intent to run for re-election, and good for him. But I'm looking at this Tennessee representative, this Andy Ugles, who evidently, and I got to know if this is something he can get in trouble for. Evidently, he ran a GoFundMe account that raised about $25,000 to build a children's burial garden for stillborn children and kids and I guess ones that are lost prematurely, so that they could bury them. And because I know, like in Ohio, even if you have an abortion in Ohio, they give you the you have to dispose of the fetus either through burial or cremation. But this guy raised $25,000, and there's no burial garden, and he's not saying where the money went. Is this something he can get in trouble for?
Well, yes, definitely. Now, you know, he had he's got a little bit of Santos, a little bit, not a lot, in the sense he had an inflated resume, right?
Oh yeah,
and you know, he's had some hits on that, but this is this was a personal tragedy where the stillborn death of a child, who he will post on his social media, by the way, he posts the picture, and then he did the GoFundMe. And he took in, of course, like you said, you know, thousands of dollars. It was supposed to be for a children's burial garden. Again, there's no burial garden. No one knows where the donations went. And he refuses to say what he did with the money. Now, what ought to happen? And let me give you a quick example, Rick. There was a guy I was in prison with. He was a volunteer fireman. He took the debit card in the state of Delaware, put it into a machine, took out $200 or $300. The bank was in Maine, okay? The feds went in, and they got him for interstate wire fraud. And he served 4 years.
Wow.
On this case, with this congressman, I guarantee you on a GoFundMe, I guarantee you money came from other states, right?
Yeah.
And if he didn't use it for that purpose, that's federal. If the feds want to, they could depose him, ask him to be deposed. Then if he lies, that's obstruction of justice, perjury. If he doesn't lie, then it's interstate wire fraud. So this is an easy one. Yes. They could do that.
Wow. Well, this is going to be a story interesting to watch over the next several days to see him undig himself out of this mess. And it's amazing how many of these swindlers and cons, you know, have these things that are going on and abuse tragedy. I hope he built a garden somewhere, and I hope this is all wrong. But to this point, it's not looking like it.
Well, he won't answer any questions. That kind of tells you, yeah. You know, maybe he's busy out making the garden now.
He's out at 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah. Scary, sad stuff. But, Bob, I appreciate the time, as always. Good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Nagy. No, seriously, I mean, I don't want to believe everyone's horrible, but I look at this stuff, and they just keep proving time and time and time again. I want to believe, you know, people are decent and do the right things. And again, they just, well, that. And if this is what, this is, if he did what he did, there should be a place for it. Quick break right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. Albert Shanker was fed up. Mr. Shanker taught math at a junior high school in Astoria, Queens. He and his colleagues felt they were underpaid and not respected. The assistant principal of the school even spied on their classrooms with binoculars. The teachers felt they had little power to change things because of how divided the teachers were. There were more than 100 representative organizations dividing New York teachers along lines of ethnicity, gender, and subject matter. The Teachers Guild was the only group affiliated with organized labor, but they only had 1,500 members of the approximately 45,000 teachers in New York City. Shanker decided to join the guild anyway, and with the support of his fellow teacher Dan Sanders and the American Federation of Teachers organizer David Selden, they started holding meetings. The meetings included talks about unions, drinks, and guitar music. More and more teachers began to attend. In 1959, 1,200 members of the High School Teachers Association walked off the job in a wildcat strike. Even though the HSTA was a rival organization, the guild members supported the strike. When the high school teachers won a wage increase, momentum began to build. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1960. The two groups merged to form the United Federation of Teachers Local 2 of the AFT. The new union still only represented a fraction of the New York City teachers, yet they decided to test their power and hold a one-day strike.
Less than 6,000 teachers participated, but the new union had proven its willingness to act. In December of 1961, UFT became the bargaining union for all New York teachers. And out of these first steps, the UFT today represents nearly 200,000 teachers and is a powerful force for labor rights in New York.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick show programming note. Friday, we're going to be off for the big holiday, St. Paddy's Day. Heading up to Boston with my kids. We have this little ritual. Just started last year. We'll go up to Boston. We spend the weekend. Going to go see our friends of the Dropkick Murphys. That should be fun. Also going to see some of the local historical sites. Little education. Important to see, the kind of stuff that they've got there. Last year we were on the USS Constitution. They decked it out. So we spent some time looking at the ships and the cutest little gunboat that they had in the harbor. This tiny little... tiny little gunboat, like one guy can fit on it to patrol the park there where all the ships that they have on display. Just hysterical. But that's where we're going to be going to enjoy the our good friends in the Boston area. Looking forward to that. So a quick programming note on that front. Now Ron DeSantis again. We're going to hear a lot of this. Whenever DeSantis's name comes up, think authoritarian. Because evidently Axios has fired a reporter because that reporter said that a recent event that DeSantis had was propaganda. And you look at the statement that they put out, because DeSantis released a statement saying that they were going to expose the scams that they are trying to push onto our students across the country. And it is. It's propaganda. So this reporter in an email said it's propaganda. This isn't a press release. Well, that made some people angry. And some people don't like that. Now, remember, Florida's the state where there's a piece of legislation banging around that if you speak badly of, if you're a blogger and you're going to speak about DeSantis, the lieutenant governor, or the legislature, you have to register. If that shouldn't freak you out, I don't know what. Look, I'm a free speech guy. Say what you want. In fact, I find some of the really horrible stuff that they write about Biden to be quite comical. Vile, vain, horrible. But, that people's minds work in these spaces and that anyone would read it for actual information, I find comical. But I don't think you should have the right taken away from you. Or have Big Brother looking over your shoulder. But this is what we're going to expect from a DeSantis if he ever rises to the level of president. And I remember, this is the same guy who there was a prosecutor he didn't like. He didn't think that prosecutor was going to do what he wanted, so they removed him, put his own prosecutor in, where the state Supreme Court said, you have broken the Constitution. You are wrong. But... the federal judge who ruled on this said, there's nothing I can do about it. And now it's going through more of a court process. Doesn't matter how many tax dollars he squanders. He's wrong. But that doesn't matter because it's not what it's about. It's about power and control. Because here, while this is all going on, he still has his prosecutor where he wants them, going after the people that he disagrees with. Or that disagree with him. So for me, this is important to be paying attention to. When these things pop up, and they will continue to pop up time and time again, working people be weary. Because you are on the list. These are not your champions. Authoritarians never are champions of working people. They're champions of the wealthy, the powerful, the elites. Not you and me. So be wary. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the